The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Coming into the Arizona series, bottom five in the National League in everything offensively. And for that to be the case and still be 6-7 is the surprising part to me, because I thought the lineup was going to have to hit. And it is going to have to hit, right, Derek? I mean, if they're going to win the division, if they're going to be a postseason team, the lineup has to be at least good. It doesn't have to be number one in the National League. That was, I thought, the easy strength of the team coming into the year.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined today, and I'm thrilled to have him, as always, perhaps the most regular guest on BP. Well, not regular. Like, you're not regular. But, I mean.
I'm not normal, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, you're not. I mean, you're super regular. your replacement level co-host. Is that
there we go.
No, that's not even a compliment. Sorry about that.
That's a $10 million a year player.
Oh, there you go. Okay, yeah. No, I think you're You're a wins above average guy. I think that's what you're a co-host above average.
Not all right, just yeah, that makes level. Sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're a
like
strong.
I'm a two-win guest.
Oh my gosh, you're more than that. You're definitely you're like a 3-2.
Oh, cool.
3-2 win guest. Yeah, that's strong.
$20 million plus. I'm good with that.
No, that's strong. You're strong. Of course, you know the check is in the mail. There.
Yeah,
that is of course KMOX's Kevin Wheeler. My friend and my go-to guy for the best podcast in baseball. Really happy to have you. And I wanted to talk to you because we talked before spring training. So I think it makes sense now to kind of get back with you, circle back here, you know, with them having 13 games into the season. They're about to head to the West Coast for the second time this month. The schedule is about to lighten up, meaning the quality of opponent is going to change. They still have the series against Arizona. But, you know, they're through the kind of that thicket, that gauntlet of Padres, Dodgers, home opener, and then the Phillies come to town. You know, they've got back-to-back series against the past two back-to-back NL pennant winners. Just we'll start there, Kevin. What's your kind of view of how this season has started for them?
I would say that the word that I would use is probably fine, right? It's been fine. You know, you had a couple of terrible games early against the Dodgers and you blew a lead in the fourth game there where you could have gotten a split, but you're 6-7 in your first 13 games and you didn't have your ace until the other day, and you haven't had Lars Nootbaar and you haven't had Tommy Edman. You haven't had Keenan Middleton. So, you know, there are 5-6 guys. I didn't even list Dylan Carlson. There's 5-6 guys that you expected to be regular contributors to you that you haven't had, and you're 6-7. That's fine. I mean, it's not great. It's not something, we're not printing postseason tickets or anything, but you're surviving, and that's what you do when you're down a number of players.
What do you make of how they're surviving? I think, you know, the final game against the Phillies really put in perspective about the major influences on the team at this point in time. One is a lack of offense. They just really have not had a drumbeat of offense. They're really lacking power. You know, four of the team's home runs are right from the catching position. Three are from Nolan Gorman. None are from Nolan Arenado. So right. I think, you know, Paul Goldschmidt is still looking for his second home run. You know, at one point in time, they had five regulars in the lineup hitting 200 or less, and it took extra inning single to raise that average to 200 and not have all five of them below 200. Batting average is what it is, but this early on in the season, we're seeing that the batting average that I just mentioned certainly reflective of how many times they're on base. So that's the one kind of hole on this team, is a real lack of offense, specifically power from the group in the middle. The other is what pressure that's putting on the other facets of the game and how perfect the bullpen and defense has to be. They've risen to the challenge, those sides. Like, they have done defensively and with the bullpen, they've done exactly what is asked of them to not have this be a far worse start. And that last game against the Phillies featured one the lack of offense. Two, some defensive errors, fundamental errors, that led to runs that cost them the game, sort of reinforcing how good they've had to be to not lose more games.
Yeah. I mean, I think you described it well. Again, you know, your offense isn't doing anything. Coming into the Arizona series, bottom five in the National League in everything offensively, everything, home runs, batting average, on base percentage, runs, you name it. And for that to be the case and still be 6-7 is the surprising part to me, because I thought the lineup was going to have to hit, and it is going to have to hit, right, Derek? I mean, if they're going to win the division, if they're going to be a postseason team, the lineup has to be at least good. It doesn't have to be number one in the National League, but it has to be at least good, because that was, I thought, the easy strength of the team coming into the year, because we had the questions about what you were going to get specifically, not so much at what you would get in terms of workload, but what you would get in terms of quality from several guys in the rotation. Mm-hmm. And the bullpen certainly looked the part coming in, right? You had a lot of depth, more depth than you've had in the past, more strikeout than you've had in the past. And that's the part that's been awesome. Jojo Romero looks like the real deal. And again, it's 2 weeks, but it's 2 weeks tacked on to last year. The question was whether he could repeat last year, and he certainly looks like it. he certainly looks like that's going to continue. Gallegos looks better, more like the guy we saw before last season. Kittredge has been awesome. I think it's clearly the bullpen complementing the rotation, and the rotation has been largely good, but at times bad, right? I mean, you had a couple of blowups here and there with a lot of runs allowed. But overall, if you're taking it like a number of games rather than averaging it out, because the average is skewed by the bad ones, it's been fine. It's not great, but it's been fine. The offense is the scary part. And I guess, Derek, the question I have is it encouraging in a way that the offense has been what it's been? And largely it's struggling because the best guys haven't been the best guys, right? I mean, if Goldschmidt and Arenado were just normal Goldschmidt and Arenado, the offensive numbers would be significantly better. And you're probably looking at least two more wins already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe more. Maybe, you know, there are a few of these games where they've had to, you know, what's the scraping claw and, you know, gnash their teeth and try to, you know, fundamental their way to some runs. And I think when, you know, there were a few games there for the taking, if they had just capitalized on opportunities with a crooked number as opposed to one or zero. And then you look at a lot more happening, right, for their record, but a few more wins and maybe even a split in LA,
right,
and that road trip all of a sudden looks like, oh my gosh, they went in there, they went out there right at the beginning of the season, they took on two teams and they come out with a winning record on that road trip. That would have been possible. I found it interesting that you mentioned Jojo Romero in regards to the offense, and this will make sense, I promise. You mentioned, I wrote a story about the bullpen and what is happening there and this commitment to Ryan Helsley in the ninth inning. And as Oliver Marmol was talking about the commitment to Ryan Helsley in the ninth inning, it dawned on me that that's not so much about Ryan Helsley. That's now about the guys leading into him and the trust that Jojo Romero and Giovanni Gallegos and especially Andrew Kittredge has created for the bullpen. Andrew Kittredge is really the nexus point of what you're looking at with the bullpen. They wanted to be on the attack. They wanted to go get first pitch strikes. They wanted to use their stuff, challenge hitters. No more of this walking stuff. You know who does that better than almost anybody? Actually, you know who literally does that better than anybody this year? Andrew Kittredge. You know who does that as an organization as well as anybody? Tampa Bay.
Right.
And he's come in and echoed what Dusty Blake has been trying to tell them and what we haven't seen from the bullpen before, where, you know, they had high walk rates. They blew a lot of leads last year. They danced around things. They had great stuff, but they didn't get great execution or great results. All right. So now I'm going to bring this around to Jojo Romero and the Cardinals offense.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most. Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Jojo Romero last year got a chance to close. And Oliver Marmol thinks that that was very important for how they wanted to use the bullpen this year. Put him in those spots, get him in those high leverage spots. And all of a sudden now he's a guy that can go against the kind of the toughest part of the order, regardless of inning. And that frees up the ninth for Ryan Helsley because he no longer has to go into the seventh or the eighth against the tough part of the order and then have them kind of improvise the ninth.
Right.
You mentioned that Jojo Romero's success at the end of last year kind of flows into his role and his success this year. So it's not just small sample size.
Right.
Here's the question about the offense. How much of what happened at the end of last year, and more specifically, how much of what happened at spring makes this not a small sample size?
Yeah, that's a great, that's the great question is when does it become established? Now, to me, the longer you've been around, the more leeway you get. Right. I mean, part of the problem. So if Jojo Romero had that kind of success in Philly and then had a bad year or something like that, and then came back last year and did this, it's a different equation than if he had been like what he has been, which is barely a major leaguer. Right. Before last year, he was up and down on the shuttle between Scranton, Wilkes-Barre and Philadelphia. He wasn't really a regular part of what they did. I think you get more grace for Goldschmidt and Arenado specifically. Some of the other guys are a little bit more in that category that we're talking about with Romero, but with the big boys, there's going to be more. It takes more for their story to change, right? Because, like, for example, use Paul Goldschmidt. Last year, Paul Goldschmidt's batted ball numbers were phenomenal. He hit the ball hard, and he hit the ball hard all the time, and he suffered from some bad luck. Well, that's not happening now. That's different. And with Arenado, it does look more the same with the batted ball data matching up with the performance. And the worry that brings up is the injury concern, because that's how Arenado ended last year with the injury. So, you know, I need a lot more on Goldie to be concerned, because I saw him hit the ball hard from beginning to end last year and just have some bad luck. We didn't see that with Arenado, and having the injury in the equation, I think, makes that particular situation more worrisome than first base.
You know when the last time Nolan Arenado had a home run?
Wasn't it August?
It was August 19th.
Yeah.
And, you know, I brought up in the press box the other day that he's gone a school year now, almost, without a home run. You know, part of that was the injury. Part of that continues to be his attempt to kind of unlock the opposite field power of his swing. You know, we see that again and again. We saw that certainly in the open.
Yeah, that weird half finish swing that doesn't.
Well, yeah, the punch swing.
Yes.
You know, I mean, like he's trying to deliver a body blow. You know, and he's trying to get his hands fast. He's trying to get his bat speed fast because he can get his hands fast. And he's trying to adjust to the ballpark that he calls home. I think that's a good reason to do it. But you do have to say, well, is the reward going to be there? Because right now it hasn't translated. It hasn't worked. And are there bad habits that it's creating? I mean, these are all things that obviously he's asking himself, and he's working with the hitting coaches on. You know, the offense is an interesting conversation, because it is – so fixed around those two guys, Paul Goldschmidt, and Nolan Arenado, top three finishers in the MVP in 2022, but it doesn't have to be. And last year, and we've talked about this before, last year, before the trade deadline, they were by all measures a top seven offense in the game. Trade deadline comes, obviously the motivation and the goal of the season changes. Mason Wynn joins the lineup every day. You know, some of the guys go on IL, just a lot happening there. And, you know, in September, in some part because Arenado's power vanished, the team's offense just collapsed and they dropped into more of the middle of the pack.
Right.
They had like that bad of a month offensively that they went from a top seven to a rather average or below average.
Right. Right.
This brought up the question that should they have done more off to add to the offense? And which one is the real offense? What was your view of that going into the season? Which was the real offense, the one they were for the first 4 months of the season or the signs of concern that they were in the second or the final third, the trimester?
Yeah, to me, the real one was with Brendan Donovan in the lineup.
Okay.
So
yeah, that was the huge. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah. Not having his on-base percentage.
And also, I want to point out Nolan Gorman, too. You know, sure. Nolan Gorman was on pace to hit 35 home runs last year, and then the back problems came up and ended his season early, but certainly impacted his production before it ended his season.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the real team was the one that was whole. And, you know, because when you're looking at the kind of players you lost your on-base driver with Donovan, you lost your best left-handed power with Nolan Gorman, and then obviously, you know, Arenado was dealing with stuff and struggling down the stretch, too. When you looked at that team in June and July offensively, that's I mean, when you're that for 4 months, almost 5 months, mm-hmm. that's what you are. That should be the expectation. Maybe the better way I should put it. That should be the expectation. And, you know, some things certainly change, but I wasn't at all worried about the lineup coming into the year. In fact, I thought they had pretty good depth because I liked having a guy like Dylan Carlson projected as a fourth outfielder who hits lefties. If nothing else, he hits lefties, and that gives you matchup plays as you're going along. And I had some concern about Tommy Edman as an everyday hitter, but he does crush lefties, and he's a good defender, so you kind of suck it up when he's facing the righties. So I didn't have anything where I thought, man, they really need to go there, because I also knew you got Sejacy waiting in the wings, another guy who can swing the bat and play a couple of different spots if you need some depth fill-in. I liked Ivan Herrera. I thought that, I mean, his rep has always been that he's a good hitter.
Yeah.
The question was always how good his defense was going to be. But he was always rated as a prospect as a good hitter. So
yeah.
You knew you were upgrading your offense on the bench with him and in a guy that would play part-time behind the plate when Contreras needed time off. So you knew that offense was going to be a little better. And I like Burleson as a depth bat. I didn't think the offense was at all a worry. To me, it was all pitching.
The scouting report on Ivan Herrera was always his bat is ahead of the league.
Yeah.
And watching this homestand, I'm like, oh, well, that still might be true.
Huh. Yeah, he can hit, man. He can hit.
Yeah, bat is still ahead of the league. That's pretty
something.
That'll
be an interesting thing we can talk about when we get to Nootbaar coming back, because I was a little confused at the roster move.
Oh, interesting. Well, I am happy to illuminate that, because it's different. I'm all about like finding out where the Cardinals are actually going to be different. And this is a area where the Cardinals say they're going to be different. They say they're going to be different. And we have a very easy measure on if they will be different. And I'm happy to discuss that. But I want to first go to the first part of your sentence there.
Yeah.
The return of Nootbaar. So as you rightfully pointed out, the offense took its downturn. Really, the first indicator of the downturn was the trade deadline, not because of who was moved, but because of them saying that's the time for Donovan to no longer be DH, get the elbow surgery, get ready for 2024. Removing him from the top of the lineup was huge. He was on base percentage. It was always the way I thought of what could be the strength of this Cardinals lineup was something that all postseason teams, and I got the numbers to back this up, but teams that excel in the postseason, they have left-handed presence.
Yes.
Phillies were just in here with Schwarber and Harper. Say what you will about Schwarber batting leadoff and his batting average, but he is a factor. You want to know one of the reasons why
he gets on base and he hits the ball over the fence? I mean, it's a good combo.
You're no kidding. Two true outcome kind of guy. Three true outcome, but two of them really matter to changing games. You want to know one of the reasons why the Texas Rangers were able to win the pennant against the Houston Astros? Because Jordan Montgomery absolutely neutralized Jordan Alvarez. You know what Jordan Alvarez does? Bat left-handed. Yeah. Time and time again in the playoffs.
Hitting like a god.
Right. Yeah. Time and time again in the playoffs, you see how because of the way bullpens are structured, because of the firepower, and because of the rest and everybody being available, right-handed hitters see a huge dive in their OPS from the regular season to the postseason. They just see their numbers just fall, especially when it comes to producing with power. Left-handed hitters don't. Left-handed hitters tend to remain as a group, so large sample size, tend to hold fast to what they produce during the regular season. That is the nature of the playoffs these years. So in that vein, the Cardinals had a pretty good setup with Brendan Donovan, OBP, Lars Nootbaar, OPS, and Nolan Gorman, SLG. Those are the left-handed presence that a good lineup that could have success in October has from the left side. And the Cardinals had a blend of it, OBP, OPS, SLG.
Yep.
Those were the trio.
Yeah.
So if last year's offense started its downturn, its precipitous downturn when Donovan was out, is this year struggling because Nootbaar's out?
I mean, some of it. That doesn't impact directly Goldschmidt and Arenado. I think that's the real core of the struggle.
Okay.
But when you're talking about being able to handle it when those guys are struggling, then yes. I mean, you know, the fact that one of your best guys, I mean, the obvious plan is you wrote about it. We've talked about it before, but the clear plan was those three lefties we're talking about being 1-3-5, Donovan 1, and then somewhere
1-3-6.
Sorry, 1-3-6, right? With Contreras hit five spot, but you know, three of your top six guys being that, and them's absent, and another one has missed a little bit of time. That was Contreras, and then two others are struggling. So yeah, when a guy you're counting on in that top five or six isn't going to be available, that puts more on the guys that are there, and when they struggle, you just don't have the ability to make up for it as well.
I see. Yeah. So shifting of expectations. Now you're down a guy, so more is expected of these other guys, and they have not even met their own expectations, so it's exposed more.
Right. Well, that's how I see the offense at this point. It's that there are some things that have been good. Donovan's been good. Obviously, Herrera's been phenomenal for the last week since he's been stepping in. Contreras was swinging the bat well before he got hit by the pitch. Gorman had just in the Philly series, just started to hit the ball over the fence a little bit and look a little bit better. So there are things that have been okay. Mason Wynn's been okay. He's been a competitive offensive player. He's not hitting for power, but, I mean, defense and speed and getting on base is what matters for him. And he's been competitive at the plate where last year, I'm not sure he was.
You can make the case that he's been the best player for them.
I mean, all around. Yeah. 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 I mean,
he's been the best position player for them over the stretch.
Power, but a little bit, right? A double, triple here and there.
It's not his game.
Yeah. And you're not getting it. You're not drawing any walks. So he's going to have to hit 300 to have a passable on base percentage. But again, the expectation for him is not to be one of the driving forces of the offense. It's to be a competitive major league hitter and then go play that great defense.
I mean, it's not a shock that the Cardinals are struggling offensively. Maybe it is a shock where they're struggling offensively, but it's not a shock that the Cardinals are struggling offensively due to the injuries, because the back third of the lineup is all rather young and still new and in a lot of ways vulnerable.
Yeah, and they're not alone. Like, coming into the series against the Cardinals, in fact, coming into the other day, the Phillies had hit like 19 straight singles. Like, they're 19 straight singles. So, I mean, they're not the only team that's having offensive struggles. There are a bunch of them out there. I mean, Judge is at .170. So, yeah, I mean.
And also, the Cardinals faced an otherworldly Bobby Miller. You know, they had pretty good. What's that? Yeah, Glasnow was great. Musgrove was great. They had, in a condensed version, pretty strong pitching that they faced in that stretch as well.
Yeah.
And a knuckleballer.
Yeah, they hit him, though.
Of all things. Yeah, but, you know, I'm on hitters talk about how that messes them up for a couple of days. So,
yeah, you know, that's true.
I mean, you could, whether you buy that or not, that's fine. But I want to ask you about Alec Burleson then. Mm-hmm. Here's another left-handed bat who's doing well. I mean, he's hitting well, but is about to be marginalized.
He's hitting well.
Don't you think?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Elaborate.
All right. So 600 OPS is not going to catch your attention. And of course, it's early. So,
not the results. I mean, but he's just the guy who's going to always hit the ball hard at people. Maybe that's just it. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, he's not hitting the ball that hard. He's a little bit above average, but like if you're looking at like his expected slug and all that, it's still under 400. You know, it's not like, I mean, he can put the ball in play, which is what his strength is, and he will hit some balls hard, but I mean, I'm looking at batted ball data that doesn't blow me away.
That's fair.
It's not terrible. It's fine. Like, you know, his hard hit rate is pretty good. His average exit velo is pretty good. It's above, both are above average. Okay. Yeah. So
his expected batting average is top 20 percentile.
Barrels, and he's chasing too much and he never walks. And I mean, to me, it profiles as, I mean, I'm not saying he's bad at all. He's fine. But I'm not going out of my way to create at bats based on what I've seen so far.
Okay. This is where I wanted to go is, and maybe it's just all relative. That's probably where my eyes are, right?
It's a lot of other guys aren't doing what he's doing.
Right. And now he's going to be the one that is going to start losing at bats. Right. And he bats left-handed. So he fits into this, the what I was mentioning earlier.
Right.
So it also is a doorway into what do you make of Jordan Walker?
Yes.
And is Burleson and Walker, is this headed towards a platoon? Is that, what do you make of those two guys? Because clearly the Cardinals want Jordan Walker, and there's every reason for them to want this, to be their everyday right fielder.
Yeah.
They have adjusted the defense in a lot of ways around that. But what do you see from this combo, and how can this develop for the Cardinals so that right field, which, let's be honest, is where big bats live,
yeah,
can be a more authoritative position for them.
I mean, you've got to let Walker go. You have to. I mean, and by that, I mean, you just got to keep running him out there. I mean, he's a top prospect. I don't have any interest in a platoon with him. If I'm platooning him, I'm sending him down to AAA. And I don't want to do that because he has actually shown pretty good defensive improvement, Derek. I mean, like, he ranks above it. Now, again, it's so early that defensive metrics are very difficult to rely on at this point.
He's above average of right field right now.
Average as of right now. And that's a big difference because he was one of the worst in the league last year.
Yeah. So
again, it's only 2 weeks. It could change. I'm not saying he's fixed and he's better, but he's showing signs that he's made improvement there. He hits the ball really hard.
He's
in the top 7%. I want that to play over Alec Burleson being in the 60 percentile range, especially considering one guy's 21 and is one of the top prospects in the sport in terms of just physical capability. The problem for both of them is kind of the same, though. They hit too many damn ground balls. They hit too many ground balls.
Let's talk about that. All right. So they do hit a lot of ground balls.
Is too much.
What's that?
And in Burleson's case, he also chases too much.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Without the payoff of power, right? I mean that. Right. Right. So let's talk about the ground balls. Last year at this time, the Cardinals were about coming up on the year anniversary of where they were running a chaotic roster. There's no other way to put it. They were a team that was used to winning that had no idea how to stop losing. That's what they acted like. Yep. And they would eventually admit that. They would eventually, this offseason, acknowledge that, which I found wonderful because they pushed back hard when I put that sentence in the paper. Great.
Right.
That's fine. But they acted like it. You know, it was very unusual for the Cardinals to DFA a guy one day and then try to sign him 48 hours later because they had made a choice to demote their top prospect who they had committed to. There's no other way to put it than that was uncharacteristic.
Yep.
And it was definitely a team that had no idea how to put the brakes on a losing stretch because they'd never experienced it before. Fine. Jordan Walker is hitting a lot of ground balls. And one of the reasons they gave for putting him back in Memphis last year was so that he could work on his swing to elevate the ball, hit the ball hard. That doesn't mean more fly balls. That means more line drives. And the reason for this is going back to the old Dave Duncan school of pitching is hard ground balls or hard hit balls on the ground are doubles, sometimes triples, but they're mostly singles. Hard hit balls in the air are doubles and can be home runs. Keep the ball on the ground is what Dave Duncan said, even if they hit it hard, but keep the ball on the ground. The Cardinal fans buy into the Dave Duncan thinking, then also have to buy into the other side of it as a hitter, right?
Correct.
Get the ball in the air. All right. And that's what they wanted with Jordan Walker. I would really be interested in your thoughts on this conversation that was taking place during spring training outside the Cardinals organization. They've made their commitment. But outside the Cardinals organization, Kevin, there was discussion about maybe just let Jordan Walker hit the ball hard for a while. Just go be that hitter. Go hit for high average. Go punish balls through the infield and become, you know, a high average hitter, maybe without the damage in the air. Just go do that at your age. And then as you grow into the league, as you grow as a hitter, the power will be there. But at least he has positive reinforcement upon which to build that career. I'm not sure if that would work, but I thought that was an interesting way to go about it because of the experience that the player with the most comparable size to Jordan Walker and style of swing to Jordan Walker, how his career went. And that's Aaron Judge. At the same age that Jordan Walker is right now, Aaron Judge was in college. He was not hitting for a lot of power. He was hitting with a lot of authority, but he wasn't putting the ball over the fence. That came later. Jordan Walker's that same age that Aaron Judge, again, was in college at this time, only he's trying to do this against the best competition in the world. Not college, the best in the world. So what do you think of that? I mean, is there an argument to be had that, hey, man, just go hit. Hit the ball hard and see that batting average climb. And a couple of years from now, if not a couple months from now, which maybe they're trying to create, then you're the 30 home run guy.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I have no interest in platooning him. I mean, you gotta let him roll, especially if he's going to be competent defensively, because he's got the upside that other guys don't have. And you know, the problem is not that he's doing that now. Because, yes, you're going to have to live with it for a little bit. You have to work on it little bit by little bit. Now, he's going to have to, though, because Aaron Judge did work on that. He did make that change. Otherwise,
absolutely,
50 home runs a year.
Right.
So the question is, which direction does he go? Does he go the Aaron Judge direction where he does learn, okay, these are the pitches that I can't get in the air and I'm grounding out all the time. I'm going to start laying off of those, because it's not all about swing plane. Some of it is. Some of it's mechanics. You know, I know he talked in spring about working on not sitting so heavy on that backside and collapsing the back. You know, his back ankle kind of rolls when he
on the knee, and he would drive almost like he was bowling.
Yes, and I know he talked about trying to work on that, so it sounds, you know, like he gets that there are some things that he can do differently.
Yeah, but get more upright, not go after the low pitch because that's going to be a ball on him, those kind of things.
Yes, and I think pitch selection is probably the big thing. Is he's going to have more success with pitches that are not at the bottom of the strike zone because he's obviously hitting those on the ground. The question I have, and I don't know the answer, I'm not trying to imply one way or the other, but I think it provides an interesting ceiling and floor for Jordan Walker. The ceiling being Aaron Judge, right? You know,
sure.
Stupid or hit the ball hard. I'm not calling for 50 home runs, but you know what I mean? Like a legitimate middle of the order power guy who's got the big body like that. The floor to me seems like it might be Jason Hayward, who is also huge guy, very strong, but never has figured out how to stop hitting the ball on the ground. Mm-hmm. And he always had weird mechanics, never wanted to change them, had his hands held weird. He's another guy, by the way, that sits on that back leg like Walker does and has that back foot that kind of rolls and collapses as opposed to the backside driving through the ball. And great now point. Hayward, quality major league player, right? I mean, he's just not lived up to what people thought he would be because if you just look at his career, he's always been on the wrong side of the league average on ground ball rate. And, you know, he doesn't hit the ball. I don't think he's ever really hit the ball as hard consistently as Walker does.
No.
But I think as a hitter, that's kind of the floor for Walker.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about is right. Jordan would be that with a harder hit rate, and that would get more ground balls through. So a higher average, but not right. as much damage.
Right, and again, Hayward is not a big home run hitter. Right. And part of the reason is that he hits too many grounders. Again, his average exit velo is also, I don't know, like 4 or 5 miles an hour below Walker's average. So that's why I'm saying that like the numbers there are probably Walker's floor. Because by hitting the ball harder, he's just going to get a sheer number of more hits, even if you're hitting ground balls compared to a guy like Hayward. So that's not the end of the world. That's still a regular major league player, right? Like an everyday major league player in your prime years. And then that upside is that all-star power guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. At what point do the Cardinals, at what part have the Cardinals put themselves in a position to need him to be that guy?
Well, I mean, in the moment, they shouldn't need that, right? In the moment, that should be coming from Goldschmidt and Arenado. And then I'd throw in Gorman and not the power part, but just the known production part with Donovan. It should be coming from Contreras. And again, Contreras, I think, has swung the bat pretty well since beginning of May last year.
Yeah.
A struggle for a lot of reasons. But after that, he kind of locked in and has been Wilson Contreras at the plate. So, and behind it, to be honest.
This year he's way up there this year when he's been behind the plate. I don't know, the home crowd hasn't seen him catch yet.
Yeah. So I don't think that they should have to rely on Walker now. I don't think that he should be viewed as a key to this season. Could be a great bonus if the production, cause you know, his production went up when he came back up last year. You know, I mean, a lot of his numbers, like you look at the ground ball rate last year, was a little worse than league average. Most of that was before the demotion.
He had a solid on base percentage last year. I mean, in the end, and he's really still, for a mile out of the second half, he did well in the art of not making outs.
He doesn't chase too badly for a big power guy. His walk rates are good. They're above average and probably get better the more dangerous he gets.
All right. So if the Cardinals, like you said, all right, their commitment to Jordan Walker, all right, they got this commitment right now to Victor Scott II, and really that's going to become a test of how devoted to defense they are. And as we discussed, they've had to play some exceptional defense to win some of these games, and they want that to be a hallmark of their season. Having that guy in center field, similar to having that guy at shortstop, is really important to them. But so too, Kevin, is production from the outfield, which they really haven't had now for several seasons. How do they generate that? And it can't be as simple as Lars Nootbaar's return.
I mean, no, nothing is that simple, but that's why I asked the question or mentioned earlier that I was surprised that Pajes was the guy that went down when Nootbaar was activated, because at this moment in time, you need Contreras and Herrera in the lineup. You need them both.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're hitting. Especially Herrera is hitting. So if you're looking at this, you know, with Victor Scott being the center fielder because of defense, well, that means that you have left field, catcher, and DH for four guys. And they are all four guys you need in the lineup right now. So how do you do it? You sit Jordan Walker, which I don't think is a great idea for the reasons we just talked about. You know, you sit Nolan Gorman, which, again, not a great idea. You need that bat in the lineup. So I completely agree with and understand the larger picture of wanting to emphasize defense. But why are they so rigid about it? Why can't they just say, hey, listen, right now, this moment in time, until we get Goldie and Nato going, we do need to play for a little more offense. So why not, in that scenario, say Lars Nootbaar is going to play center for a little bit, or occasionally, or three times a week, or whatever. I mean, he played center field in the World Baseball Classic, and it was fine. It didn't hurt Japan's chances. It didn't hurt their team defense. I'm not saying he's great out there. I am saying at a time when you need offense, it doesn't make sense to me to take one of four guys that you're going to need in the lineup and leave them out for a guy that's not hitting at all. And I love Victor Scott. I'm a huge fan of what he can be and what I think he's going to be. He is damn near helpless at the plate right now, Derek. I mean, he's not chasing pitches, right? His chase rate's really good. So that means he's getting a lot of pitches in the strike zone, and that's what he's swinging at, and he's doing nothing with it.
Mm-hmm.
He's not hitting the ball hard. He's striking out. He's not walking. He's not ready. And I hope it changes. I hope he goes on a tear on the road trip. I think that guy has got a great, great future. But defense can be amazing, but offense can't be a zero. It can't for this team right now.
The long haul. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Now, in a few weeks, if the two big boys start hitting, no worries. No big deal. It's okay.
I've seen this play out before. I've seen this movie. Colton Wong was a really good defensive player, right?
Right.
At second base. Colton Wong was providing all right offensively. Fine. He was fine, maybe a little bit below what they expected. But Mike Matheny, the manager at the time, kept starting Mark Ellis at second base.
Mm-hmm.
Kept starting him at second base because his argument was that the offense was struggling and they needed offense. And that was at a time when the Cardinals were like, we're going to give a little bit defensively to get a little bit more offense. They kind of ignored for a little while the ballpark they played in and tried to go all offense. This was, you know, Brandon Moss type of era.
Right.
The outfield. And, you know, so Colton Wong wasn't playing much. So the front office said, well, if he's not playing much here, he's not developing and he doesn't need to be here. If he's in the majors, he's going to play and he's not playing. So off he went to AAA. Difficult message to be sent to a young man. That, like, you're doing a lot of the things right. You're playing defense like we want you to. You're contributing offensively. There's more there. But because everybody else around you is also struggling and the manager's not playing you, you're going to AAA. Everybody else is staying. That's business. That's hard. That's the way baseball works. And that is where the Cardinals are headed now with Victor Scott, with the exception being that he's struggling offensively, right? That's what you can hang it on. But like I've seen this before.
His expected production is in the bottom 3 or 4% of baseball.
Right. Yeah. And, I've seen this play out before where they're like, hey, look, offensive struggles elsewhere are going to influence where you play and you're going elsewhere. That happens.
Yeah.
It's the other two parts that I think we can tease out and almost separate, right? Lars Nootbaar in center field. I think you're going to see that. That's my personal view, just in talking with folks, not had anyone confirm that. But the sense of the trend line is, I think, exactly as you outlined, that is something that is going to happen, especially when you start looking at some of the ballparks that they're going to, right? All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Home, wide open spaces, try to, you know, some fly ball pitchers. I think you're going to start seeing the offense in some ways reflect the ballpark, but in more ways reflect the pitcher that they have on the mound. Ground ball guy, going to see Lars Nootbaar in center field. Fly ball guy, going to see maybe Victor Scott the second in center field, all right? Big open spaces at the ballpark, going to see Victor Scott the second in the outfield, especially with a fly ball pitcher on the mound. You know, a little bit more confined, a little bit less range to roam out there in center, going to see Lars Nootbaar. I think that's how that plays out. I think that's the direction they're headed in. And that is also a tell a little bit about how much they can stay committed to the defense first.
Yeah.
They have to give a little to get some offense.
Yes.
That brings us to the Ivan Herrera aspect of it. And you mentioned you need to see both of them in the lineup.
For now.
No, I think you're going to see it more often than just now.
Yeah, I mean, Herrera can hit, so yeah.
Yeah, the Cardinals are going to – this is – I understand that, like, for – more than two decades now, or about two decades now, the perception of the Cardinals and their catcher spot has been that they have a starter and then they have a backup, and they don't ever want to use that backup, even to pinch hit, because they say, well, we need an emergency catcher, all this stuff, right? Really, the only catcher that I could think of, and you're welcome to tell me I'm wrong, is or that I'm overlooking somebody, where they would go for a pinch hitter was Wieters. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was a switch hitter and could put the ball over the fence.
Right.
And so there were times when that made sense and they would use him.
But it was still pretty rare.
It's still pretty rare. The Cardinals, manager Oliver Marmol, they are reimagining the whole backup catcher spot because of Herrera. To the point that you will see lineups against left-handed pitching, you know, say Jordan Montgomery all of a sudden appears in this series against Arizona, when he's not expected to, but say he is, you would see Herrera and Contreras in the lineup. Contreras would be DH. Herrera would be the backup, would be the catcher, the starting catcher. And if something happens at catcher, which it can happen, we've seen it happen, Contreras would go back into the catching spot and the Cardinals would play a National League game.
Mm-hmm.
That is what Marmol has outlined. That is what he said he's eager to do. He said, you cannot overlook, the presence that Herrera brings offensively.
Yes.
And you have to find a way to make that work. Now, it could also be flipped every so often where Herrera would be the DH against the left-handed pitcher.
Right.
All right. So I think, Kevin, I think we're all kind of in the mode of, well, this is how they've always approached that backup catcher spot. And, you know, it's going to be a 25-man roster and there's going to be the guy who just sits there because, you know, that's what, you know, Tony Cruz, that's what Andrew Kisner, that's what, you know, Jared Laird, that's what Gary Bennett, that's what they did. You
but this is why I'm confused. This is why I don't understand why you don't just keep Pajes, because you have a bench with two guys that are the same. You don't need Ciani and Scott when Newt Barr's healthy. When you get an outfielder back, you do not need both of those guys. Because as you set it up now, your bench is four left-handed hitters. So you got nobody coming from the right side at all late in the game.
Which they're fine with.
Again, okay, that's great. If you're not worried, and I'm not, if you're not worried about...
Do you want to know why? This is great. This is great baseball talk. Do you know why they're not?
Donovan, Newt Barr, and Gorman are handling lefties.
No, even better. I mean, that's part of it, right? But do you want to know why? It's because of the three-batter minimum.
For sure. Absolutely.
And they set up the lineup
so it doesn't matter. Why do you need both Ciani and Scott, though? I mean,
well, one of them's the starting center fielder.
Not if we're talking about the scenario where you got both catchers in the lineup and Donovan and Newt Barr.
Yeah.
Not in that scenario because there's nowhere for him to be.
He might still be.
How do you do that?
I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I do.
Because Gorman's at second. Donovan's in left. If Newt Barr's going to play center, he's in center. And then you got the two catchers. There's no spot for Scott in that scenario. And that's not an everyday thing. We know. I mean, I think your description was perfect. It's going to have to be a little bit flexible and all of that. But in this current scenario, you don't need Ciani and Scott.
Today. You would say today you don't need that.
Correct. Right. You might say Newt Barr goes back on the injured list. Well, all right. We're going back to what we've had. But having both of them, two left-handed hitting outfielders that don't hit, is not making your bench better.
Having a catcher who's just going to sit there does?
Well, I mean, but in that emergency scenario, you don't have to go to National League ball. You don't have to put a pitcher in there and then pinch hit these guys that are speaking of Scott and Ciani, because, yeah, you could use Burleson, but he may already have been used. Or what I mean, like, I just don't understand putting yourself in a position where you might have to eliminate a DH spot. And that's a disadvantage.
But you would only have to do that if they started the game together.
I get it, but you're still...
You wouldn't have to do that if Herrera comes off the bench as a pinch hitter.
But right now, the way it is, like for the time being, whether that's a week or 2 weeks or maybe another 3 or 4 days, but for the time being, they're both probably in there. And it just seems like a weird thing. Like, it's not like either... You don't need both of them. And now, again, I would keep Scott. I would not be sending him down today. Now, when you start getting to the conversation about, well, when you get to like the Carlson and Edmund time frame, which we don't know what that is exactly yet. Well, sure, then we can talk about that. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm overdoing this point, but I don't understand why you would be willing to put yourself at a disadvantage in a game late because you have to lose your DH just so you can have two of the exact same guys on your bench.
Well, what is the alternative?
In the scenario. Well, the alternative is one of the outfielder goes and you keep Pajes and you don't have to worry about any of that.
But then you don't use Pajes.
That's fine. You're not using Ciani. He's got seven at bats. He's not going to play.
I guess I don't understand, like, where you think the flexibility comes from that isn't already there. And I look, Páez is a really good prospect. Páez is a really good prospect, really good defensive player. It has some upside with his bat. You know, he only had the one plate appearance. We know why he was here. Kind of maybe a little bit slightly surprised that he didn't start the day game after night game, but, you know, not, I mean, that was a coin flip at best, and Herrera's going well, so they're going to go with him. But I guess I'm just kind of stuck on the fact that, like, where for you does that improve the lineup?
Well, again, the lineup,
improve the options.
If you're
improve the options, because you know what Siani on the bench is going to do is he's going to pinch run,
not over Victor Scott.
He is going to pinch run over Páez,
right? But not over Victor Scott. How many times are you going to use two pinch runners in a game?
But I know how often they're going to use two outfielders to improve the offense in a game. They're definitely going to go with a good hand squad, and all of a sudden you're going to see Lars Nootbaar in left, Victor Scott in center, and Siani in right.
Right, which would be if you're ahead late in the game. Correct. And again, this is on the days that you choose offense, right? On the days you're choosing to go defense, Victor Scott will be in center field.
Which is why you still have him on the team. And I understand what you're saying. So your argument would be
you're not defensive subbing in for other guys regularly enough with Siani for it to matter.
They haven't had the lead enough like that to do it. And they've had Victor Scott in the outfield.
If you're chasing offense, that means Donovan in left, Nootbaar in center, Gorman at second base, one of the catchers catching, one of them DHing.
Right.
That means both Siani and Scott on the bench with no catching insurance, and they're the same role in that particular game, right? In that, not for the next 10 weeks or whatever.
Well, I think we have the answer then is they are not going to do that.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I'm saying I was a little surprised at that. It's not the end of the world. It's not going to ruin their season or anything. I just feel like, you know, it feels like that this stage, Victor Scott is in a position where if he's not going to be playing every day. Now, again, I think your description is the correct one. There won't be an every day. But man, when you're filling out a lineup right now and your guys are struggling, it's going to be hard not to write those names in there that I'm talking about.
Well, that's why I said that this is like become kind of the first real litmus test of the season for the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Know,
there's no doubt about it that this is where they're at, that this move with Lars Nootbaar, to your point, has put them in a spot where they have shown what direction they're going to go at this first real inflection point of the season. How committed are you to being elite defensively when you're struggling offensively? How committed are you that the offense is going to come around and you believe it will? And doesn't need some kind of knee-jerk response like you had last season with Jordan Walker.
Right, right.
And how concerned are you about the offense, given that it's not just the small sample size of this season? What stock do you put into the longer term, and what stock do you put in spring training? These are the questions that they are asking, or that they are answering with their actions.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated by the idea that if Victor Scott is now transitioning because of the rest of the roster and the needs for offense, if he's going to be for a period of time a part-time player, then you don't need two of those same guys.
Well, I think he's in the Colton Wong realm then. If he's a part-time player, he's not here.
I know that the hope was that he would come up, take the job and run with it, and then they get the hard decisions later on. But I think the realistic thing was he's going back down at some point anyway.
Right. He just needs to be great
defensively. When Edmund and Carlson come back, I don't see how there's a spot for Victor Scott because he won't have anywhere to play. Tommy Edmund's going to play. Dylan Carlson will be the fourth out there. He's going to play against lefties at least. But if Edmund is there, Edmund's going to play. Now, there's some flex, right? Because when he's first back, he may not be 100%. You may want to build in some time off. But now we're still talking about a roster crunch. Because if Victor Scott's staying in that scenario, someone else is going, and that means probably Crawford or Burleson. And I don't think you want to put the only shortstop on the bench out to pasture.
No, that's not happening.
And I don't know that I want the only real good threat off the bench as a hitter to be gone either.
Well, here's how the Cardinals got in this bind, and it's injuries. The Cardinals went into the season believing like, look, Mason Wynn is going to bat ninth, and he's going to bat ninth every day, and he's going to change the game defensively, and whatever offense he brings is going to be based on his speed, and it's all going to be lanyap. It's all going to be bonus. It's all going to be unexpected and beyond, because it's the old Yadier Molina, though not as dramatic as Tony La Russa made it. It's the old Yadier Molina saying,
right,
where he doesn't have to provide a hit to change a game. He can go out there and not give any hits, and he'd still start every day. That was their thinking with Mason Wynn, because they figured his speed and his offensive talent would eventually, you know, the speed would get him by. His offensive talent would eventually manifest. And day in, day out, he's going to change a game. And we've seen this defensively.
Yes, sir.
Now, all of a sudden, instead of one guy batting ninth in the lineup or eighth in the lineup, however they would have done that, they have two like that.
Yep.
They have two guys who they're like, look, this guy's really good defensively. Got a lot of speed. One of them has 80 speed. The other one has, what, 77 and a half speed. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they, you know, one is a genuine, no doubt, hard to find base stealer. I mean, there's just no question. Victor Scott II is a base stealer, and he is willing and eager to do it. And that is no small
thing. Able. Yeah.
And able. And with the way the rules have turned and the larger bases, he can do that. He's got to get on base to do it, but he can do that. So, but the Cardinals have gone from saying we will have willingly one of these guys to now we have, because we have to, two players like this. Boy, that sure seems like one too many.
It does. And then when you throw in the stuff we talked about with Walker, you're still kind of allowing development there. And that's, by the way, why when we round this all up and kind of circle back to the beginning, this is why you need your best players to be your best players. Goldschmidt and Arenado have to hit. They have to. If they do, all this stuff we just talked about probably doesn't matter all that much.
Do they have to be MVPs, or can the left-handers make some of that less? Can
they just have the left-handed bats have to be Hall of Fame level? Yeah.
All right.
I mean, they just have to be. If you tell me that the two of those guys are both going to hit 25 home runs and post a 120 OPS plus, that's enough for what you're talking, for what we're talking about. If those two guys are just something close to what their career norms say, we don't even have to worry about this. And I'm not worried at all about whether Victor Scott's playing center field or not, right? It doesn't matter in that scenario, because if those guys are hitting, that calms everything else down. And when they're not, you see all of these questions that it creates, right? We're all with that whole conversation about Newt and Donovan and the catchers both hitting and all that. That's all necessary because the two best guys on the team aren't hitting.
Wow, that would have made a far shorter podcast, huh?
If those guys hit, I think the other things sort themselves out, right? I think then it's easy to stick with the decision to be defense first in a couple of spots, right? I mean, if those guys are producing, you should have one of the best 1 through 6s in the National League. And then if Walker hits 1 through 7, and if that's happening, 8-9 probably isn't that big of a concern if you're getting that upside with the defense and speed.
What's your level of confidence that that's going to happen?
I think they're going to be. I don't think that those guys are done. I'd say the confidence level of them eventually getting to something that is, well, I guess I would call stable, where they are worthy of their spot in the lineup, it's going to happen. I'm not that worried. I'd give it like an 80-85% confidence rate. They don't look done to me. They do. Arenado does look like he's pressing again. He does look frustrated, which I understand completely. I mean, hitting can be very frustrating. And Goldie never looks like anything. He always looks calm. He looks like he's the same every day. I feel like that's going to be there. And when it's there, these other things are probably not that big of a deal, which is why we're really only talking about how do you survive until that happens?
Maybe it's just about surviving till Oakland. Maybe it all has to do with, you know, somebody, it gets pointed out to me every so often on Twitter that, well, these guys just don't hit good pitching. It's like, well, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. Well, nobody does.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why it's good pitching, why it's elite pitching, why it's Aaron Nola, Kevin Wheeler, Kevin Wheeler. How about that? There, I put you in there. The reason why it's Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, man. No relation. Or there's no relation, right?
Not that I'm aware of.
Otherwise, that would be a heck of a battery, though.
Otherwise, I'd be dropping names Wheeler. All the time.
Yeah, dang straight. So, okay, Nola, Wheeler, Miller, Glasnow, Musgrove. Who else did they face? Darvish. They've run into what could be the National League All-Star pitching staff.
There's a bunch of guys there that could be in the Cy Young conversation at the end of the year.
Yeah, and then they're going off to Arizona, where they have arguably the best when healthy and when put together. You could argue they have the best NL.
I mean, you're getting Gallen on Sunday, and we know he's good. And you know, Brandon Pfaadt he hasn't done it for a full season in the major leagues, but he certainly looked the part in the postseason last year.
I'm not sure if you know this, Kevin, but Zach Gallen was a Cardinals draft pick, and they traded him for Marcell Ozuna. Yeah, no, really, now, it happened.
We don't have time to get this, so maybe next time we talk. But we've briefly hit on this, but man, the series of events that took place following the death of Oscar Tavares that pushed them into places they probably didn't want to be as far as trading for bats because they needed bats. And then you started chasing bats instead of going and spending, although in some cases there weren't any to spend on, right? I mean,
right.
Dexter Fowler was the best free agent hitter in that offseason, at least as far as an outfielder would fit was concerned. But man, they've chased that. They had to chase that for so long. You end up trading these guys that wound up being studs. What if?
What if? That, and maybe we'll tackle that on another podcast.
Yes, good idea. Boy,
and that means that you'll come back. So you'll come back. So you'll come back. Okay, great, great. I'm happy to hear this. I thought we were off to a rocky start, and then we end having an argument. I thought, man, this is
we argue the best.
We do argue the best. That is Kevin Wheeler. Famed broadcaster at KMOX and part of the Dave Glover Show there during drive time at KMOX 11:20 a.m. Available because of the 50,000-watt blowtorch of a signal to all 48 states. But really, you're global because you can listen to KMOX online. So find it there. You can find Kevin there. You can also find him regularly on the best podcast in baseball, which is part of the Constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Kevin, as always, thank you very much for joining me. For Kevin Wheeler, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. This has been the best podcast in baseball. Talk to you soon. So we're still pals, right?
Yes, we're always pals.
All right.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high-quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.